Woman in Black, from the novel by Susan Hill. Adapted for radio by John Strickland. Episode 3, A Nursery and a Child.
Mr. Kipps, are you late?
Yes, come in.
Oh, morning, Mr. Kipps. Oh, and a grand morning it is, too. I've brought you breakfast.
Oh, thank you. That's most kind. What time is it?
Oh, it's about 11, sir. I didn't wake you. Are you feeling better this morning? You were in quite a state last night.
Well, I can't say I slept all that well, I'm afraid. I seem to have an overdose of bad dreams.
Ah, well, did hear you calling out once or twice.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, not to be sorry for, sir. It's that place.
Eel Marsh House?
Aye.
What about it?
Well, it plays some nasty tricks.
Tricks?
On the mind, sir.
Yes. Yes, I realise that now.
Aye. Still, you're here. No harm done. No need to go back, I'm sure.
No. No, I shall not be going back to Eel Marsh.
Good. Now, I'll leave you to have your breakfast now, sir. There's no worry. You get up when you like. I should try and sleep some more, sir. Help me, I'll not be so restless now.
Thank you. But I think what I really need this morning is some exercise in the fresh air. Perhaps I'll walk into the countryside a mile or so.
Well, you'll find it nice and easy walking. Or else we can lend you a good stout bicycle.
A bicycle? Now that's a much more appealing idea. Stella, my fiancée, and I are both keen cyclists.
Well, you'll find my husband's round back in the yard there. Oh, you just help yourself, sir, if the fancy takes you.
Thank you, I will.
Oh, you're welcome, sir. It's good to have you back, safe and sound. Now, I'll leave you to finish in peace. And if there's aught else you want, just call out.
I had a better appetite than I had expected. As I ate, I put to myself various alternatives. The previous night, and even that morning when I spoke to the landlord's wife, I had been adamant in my own mind. I was having nothing more to do with Eel Marsh and the Drablow business. I would telegraph Mr. Bentley, leave matters in the hands of Mr. Jerome, and take the first available train back to London. In short, run away. I had been as badly frightened as a man could be. And yet, already, looking out at the sharp blue sky, a good breakfast inside me, my mind was no longer quite so made up. I knew that an hour's brisk cycling would do much to refresh and restore me. But I also knew, only too well, that in order to extricate myself from the whole affair, I would have to invent some excuse for Mr. Bentley. For the truth, for someone sitting in a warm office in London, would be an open invitation to ridicule and disbelief, and the probable end of my career. Despite everything that had happened to me, despite what I'd said to the landlady, I knew deep down in my heart that, in fact, I would return to Eel Marsh House. But first, I had to pay someone a visit.
Horatio Jerome, land and estate agent. Good.
Oh, it's you.
Indeed it is, Mr. Jerome. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Kipps.
May I come in?
Well, I've not much time.
Oh, this shouldn't take long, Mr. Jerome. One or two questions, no more, I promise.
Very well. I'll do my best, though I tell you now, I know very little.
Well, I'll come straight to the point. You see, I had no idea, I don't know whether you had, of the volume of papers belonging to Mrs. Drablow. Tons of the stuff. Most of it, I've no doubt, so much waste, but it will have to be gone through, item by item, nevertheless.
Indeed.
Well, it seems to me that unless I am to take up residence in Crithin Gifford for the foreseeable future... Yes, quite. I shall have to have some help.
Oh, no. I'm afraid I can't offer you help, Mr. Kipps.
Well, I wasn't thinking you would do anything personally. But perhaps you have a young assistant.
No, there's no one. I'm quite on my own here. I can't give you any help at all.
Well, help me find someone, then. Surely the town will yield me a young man with a modicum of intelligence, keen to earn a few pounds.
I'm sorry, this is a small place. Young people leave. There are no openings, you see.
But I am offering an opening, Mr. Jerome, albeit temporary.
You'll find no one suitable.
Mr. Jerome, what you mean is not that there is no one suitable. If a thorough search were to be made, I am quite certain we should find at least one or two suitable candidates for the job.
You are
backing away from speaking the truth of the matter, Mr. Jerome. Which is that I should not find a soul willing to spend any time out at Ealmarsh House for fear of the stories about the place proving true, for fear of encountering what I have already encountered.
Keckwick came back for you.
Yes. I was more grateful than I can say.
There's nothing Keckwick doesn't know about Ealmarsh House.
Do I take it he fetched and carried for Mrs. Drabbler?
Oh, she saw no one else. Not another living...
Not another living soul.
There are stories, tales. Is all that nonsense?
I can believe that.
You can discount most of it.
But not all?
You saw that woman in the churchyard.
And I saw her again. She was in the old burial ground on the island. What are those ruins?
There was a monastery once, long before the house was built. It was abandoned, left to decay, centuries ago.
And the burial ground?
There was some later use, a few graves.
The Drabblers.
Mr. Kipps, I'm sorry, but...
Mr. Jerome, I'm afraid I am not going to be put out by a ghost. Or indeed several ghosts. My time out there so far has not been altogether pleasant, I confess, and I should be glad to find a companion with whom to share the work. And it is work that has to be done. And anyway, I doubt if the woman in black can have any animosity towards me personally. Who was she? Is she? I hardly know how to refer to her.
You must excuse me, Mr. Kipps. I have a good deal of my own work to do.
Yes, of course. I simply wanted to tell you that I am quite determined to face it out, Mr. Jerome. Such things one must face.
Oh, so I said, Mr. Kipps. So I said, once.
Oh, for heaven's sake, man, don't worry about it. I doubt very much if I shall set eyes on the woman again, and if I do, I am more than capable of looking after myself.
Mr. Jerome's apparent fear served only to strengthen my own resolve. I questioned him no further, deciding that if I were to get to the truth of the business, I should have to rely on the evidence of my own senses and nothing more. In the light of Mr. Jerome's extreme reaction, I felt this was perhaps the best option anyway.
There's a man with a spring in his step. Mr. Kipps, isn't it?
Yes. Mr. Daly from the train. Good morning.
I thought it were you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
That's good.
Yes, I've just been to see Mr. Jerome.
Jerome? And how is the business?
Mrs. Drabblow's estate. Oh, I shall soon have all that in order. Though I confess there is rather more to do than I thought.
Been out to the house?
Certainly, I was out there yesterday.
Ah.
Yes, to tell you the truth, I rather enjoyed it. Quite a challenge.
Was it now?
Yes, it was. You seem doubtful, Mr. Daly.
Mr. Kipps, you are whistling in the dark.
I'm sorry?
Come for some dinner tonight. 7 o'clock.
Well, that's kind of you. Thank you. Yes, I will.
Your landlord will tell you the way.
Thank you. I'll see you at 7, then.
It's too big for us, really. Just the two of us now.
We rattle round like peas on a drum.
It's an impressive place, Mrs. Daly. Oh. You must be very proud.
Money, Mr. Kipps. That's what it's about. I'm not ashamed to say I've made a few pounds in my life. And this place is just to let everyone know. Something for them to grind their teeth over of an evening.
Do they resent your success, then?
I've no idea, Mr. Kipps. Though I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, Samuel.
What?
Whatever will Mr. Kipps think of us?
He can think what he likes. I'm speaking now but the truth. Now then, how about a port? We'll go through to the study.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Daly, for a delicious dinner and truly delightful company.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Mr. Kipps. Perhaps next time we might look forward to meeting your fiancé.
Next time? I don't suppose he'll be up here again before he has to.
Samuel!
Come on, Arthur, before I say something else wrong. Right. Set yourself down.
Thank you. You're very good health.
You're a fool if you go on with it, you know.
I beg your pardon? Oh, you're referring to my business at Ealmarsh.
Listen, I'm not going to fill you up with a lot of old wives' tales. You'd find those out fast enough if you ask about the place. Maybe you already have.
No, only hints. And Mr. Jerome turning a little pale.
But you went out there.
Yes, I went there. and I had an experience I shouldn't care to go through again. Though I confess I can't explain it.
Have a try.
It seems to me, Mr. Daly, that I have seen whatever ghost it is that haunts Eel Marsh and that burial ground. A woman in black with a wasted face. Because I have no doubt at all that the young woman I saw was what people call a ghost. Well, she did me no harm. She neither spoke nor came near me. I did not like her look, and I liked the power that seemed to emanate from her towards me even less. But I have convinced myself that it is a power that cannot do more than make me feel afraid. If I go there and see her again, I am prepared.
That's good, Arthur. That's very good. And what about the pony and trap? And the child?
Mr. Daly, if you think I should give up the job I've been sent here to do and turn tail and run, then
I shouldn't go there.
I'm afraid I'm going.
You shouldn't go there alone.
I can find no one to go with me.
No, I don't suppose you can.
Good God, man, Mrs. Drablow lived alone there for, what was it, 60-odd years. She must have come to terms with all the ghosts about the place.
Aye, maybe that's just what she did do.
Look, I think I'd better get back to the hotel. I had a late night last night.
Fair enough.
Thank you for your hospitality. And please thank Mrs. Daly once more.
You want a lift back?
No, thank you. I prefer to walk. Get some fresh air.
As you like. You sit on it, then?
Yes, yes, I am.
Then take a dog.
Actually, I haven't got a dog with me.
I have. Come on! In here! Take her. Bring her back when you're done.
Well, will she come with me?
She'll do what I tell her.
What's her name?
Spider.
Spider. All right, I'll be glad of her company, I confess. Thank you. Come on, then. Spider. Here. Come, girl.
Go on, girl. Stay with him.
His master's voice.
Tea, coffee, sugar and a couple of loaves, some butter, ham, fruit, tomatoes and a tin of biscuits. Oh, and I've put you in a slice of my apple tart too.
Well, there's sufficient here to last me a week. I hope to be there no more than a couple of nights at the most.
Well, better too much than too little, Mr. Kipps, though I don't know why you have to stop over there at all. I'm sure Keckwick wouldn't mind coming out to fetch you back.
No, it makes much more sense. The whole business will be finished much more quickly. All right, Spider-Rock, we're going in a minute. There's a good girl.
Well, me husband's dug out a torch and some Wellingtons. I don't know that they'll fit your mind.
Oh, I'm sure they'll do in an emergency. Thank you.
Now, come on, I'll give you a hand with this hamper.
Good. Come on, Spider. I think we're finally on our way.
Now you take care, Mr. Kipps. Don't be too proud.
Come on, Spider. Keep up. Nearly there.
The sun was high, the water glittering. Everywhere was light, space and brightness. The very air seemed somehow purified and more exhilarating. Once I'd arrived at Eel Marsh House, I spent half an hour establishing myself, building a fire in the drawing room, setting linen and blankets to air, letting up blinds and opening windows. And then, seated at a large desk, a pot of tea at my right hand, Spider at my feet, I commenced work. It was pretty tedious going, but I persevered patiently enough, untying and cursorily examining bundle after bundle of worthless old papers, ancient household accounts, banker statements and doctor's prescriptions, letters, Christmas cards.
There's even shopping lists here, Spider. This is all just so much waste paper apart from the letters. Well, I suppose I must read them properly later on. Oh, how about a walk, eh? I don't have some fresh air, I'm going to fall asleep. Come on. Go on, then. Go on. What do you want, eh? You want me to throw you a stick? All right, then. Okay. Go on, then. Fetch. That's it. Good girl. Come on. This way. Let's take a look at the burial ground. See if we can find my young friend. In loving memory, something Jen, something Humphrey, 1860 something, and of something something.
D-R-A-B-L-E-L, Drablo. This was the stone she was standing next to, Spider. Where is she today, eh? I wonder. Come on, it's too cold out here. I'll race you back. Go on, Spider. Go on, grab it. Statement of account. Statement of account. Oh, Spider, I really don't think I can do much more of this tonight. You're not keeping much of an eye on the fire, are you? It'll be out in a minute. You wait here while I fetch some wood. Now, where's that torch? Ah, here it is. All right, I'm here, you silly animal. Frightened on your own, were you? There. That'll soon burn up again, eh, Spider? You like your fire, don't you? What is it, girl? What's wrong? Did you think I was going to leave you just now, eh? Come on, it's all right. I was only... That's inside, Spider. There's somebody in the house. It's all right, girl. It's all right. Come on. Let's go and find out what it is, eh? Come on. You come with me. That's it. It's up here, Spider. Come on. Come on. It's this way. Stay with me now. This is the door I couldn't open before. It's locked, and yet there's no keyhole. Whoever it is, whatever it is on the other side of that door, Spider. Nothing here. No one. Who are you?
When I awoke the next morning, for somehow I had slept, though I'm still not sure how, it was to gaze out on a depressing change in the weather. It was a cold, damp day, not calculated to raise the spirits, and I felt unrefreshed and nervous after the previous night. However, Spider seemed her old cheerful self, and after a hot bath and breakfast, and with a new fire blazing in the hearth, I felt strong enough to resume my work. I worked steadily all day, clearing several more piles of rubbish, and then, after dinner, settled in front of the fire with Spider. Outside, a thick fog had descended silently over the island. The causeway was once again invisible. Inside, to while away the time, I turned my attention to a bundle of letters I had found, tied with a narrow purple ribbon and all written in the same hand. They were dated some 60 years before, and sent first from a manor house near Crithin Gifford, and later from a Scottish lodge. They were all addressed My Dear or Dearest Alice, and signed simply J, or sometimes Janet.
She's obviously a relative of Mrs. Drablow's. Fairly young, I should say, unmarried and with child. Now, in this one, she's obviously still at home with her parents. But then from here on, she's been sent to live in Scotland. Yes, yes, where her son is born. You following all this, Spider, eh? She's apparently under pressure to give the boy up for adoption. But she's obviously desperately fond of him. He is mine. Why should I...
Should I not have what is mine? He shall not go to strangers. I shall kill us both before I let him go.
Ah. Ah, here she is again.
What else can I do? I am quite helpless. If you and Em are to have him, I shall mind it less. I suppose it must be.
Em. Now, who's Em? Person unknown, eh, Spider? Ah.
Love him. Take care of him as your own. But he is mine. Mine. He can never be yours. Oh, forgive me. I think my heart will break.
I think my heart will break, Jay. And this is the adoption certificate. Nathaniel Pearson, infant son of Janet Humphrey, is hereby become the child of Morgan Thomas. Ah, Morgan, M, yes. Morgan Thomas Drablow of Ealmarsh House, Criffin Gifford, and of his wife Alice. And this looks like a death... Spider? What is it? Oh, no. We'll put an end to this, even if we have to break the door down to do it. Come on, Spider. Where there's chopped wood, there has to be an axe. Yes! I thought as much. Kegwick? Kegwick? No. It's not real. Who's in there? Who is it? Open this door. I shall use this axe. Stay with me, Spider.
It was a tall, ladder-backed chair made of dark wood with wide, worn, curved runners. As I stared until I could stare no harder, it rocked gently to and fro, as any such chair will rock when someone has just got out of it.
But they would have had to come past me. There's no other way out.
The room I was in was a child's nursery, furnished, equipped, and in such good order that the occupant might only have gone for a walk. There was none of the damp, bare, unlived-in feeling of all the other rooms in the house. There was a bed, a small table with a nightlight, the candle half burnt away. In the chest of drawers, clothes. Clothes for a small boy of 6 or 7. And toys, so many toys. Rows of lead soldiers arranged in regiments. A farm, a model ship with sails of linen. Jigsaws and chess, pens and brushes. Playing cards, a miniature trumpet. And a painted musical box from Switzerland.
They might have been played with this afternoon. And yet they must have been here half a century. Oh, Spider. There's nothing here to frighten us. Just emptiness. Sadness. Something lost. What happened here? Who is it sits here every night rocking to and fro? Who are they waiting for? What is it, girl? What is it? Spider! Come back! Wait for me!
All right, girl, quiet now.
Quiet! There's nobody there! Spider, quiet! Look, I'll show you. There's nobody out there. Spider! Come back! Spider! Spider! Here, girl! Here! Spider! Come on, Spider, where are you? Spider! Here, girl, come on, girl! Spider! Oh, God. It's quicksand.
She was floundering in the mud, fighting to maintain her balance from the pull beneath her feet. Her legs and half her body had disappeared beneath the whirling, sucking bog. Her little head was held up in the air as she struggled and yelped.
Spider! Hang on! I'm coming, girl! You just... hold on! Keep still, girl. It's all right. It's all right. Come on, just a few inches, Spider, please. I can't get any nearer. That's it. I've got you. I've got you, Spider. Oh, Spider. Spider, it's all right. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. I've got you. Leave me alone. Please, God, leave me alone. No!
Episode 3 of The Woman in Black by Susan Hill, dramatized for radio by John Strickland. Old Kipps was played by John Woodvine. Young Kipps by Robert Glenister. The Landlady by Paula Tilbrook. Mr. Jerome by Stuart Richman. Samuel Daly by Rod Arthur. And Mrs. Daly by Diane Whitley. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Technical presentation was by Peter Bellum, Steve Brook and Maggie Richmond. The music was specially composed by Derek Pierce. The Woman in Black was directed in Manchester by Chris Wallace.